Hello, my name is Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, Tom will fill us in on the latest with Qatar Airways' ungrounded Airbus A350s, while I catch you up on the latest from Boeing.
I'll see how you can get status without flying with Flying Blue, while Joe explains why the clock is ticking for the 767 freighter.
Finally, Tom will tell us about an exciting Airbus A380 experience.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And I really wanted to start this week by talking about Qatar Airways, and specifically a several-year-old drama that has finally been put to bed. So avid Simple Flying readers and listeners of our podcast will be well aware of the drama that's surrounding the airline's fleet of Airbus A350s. And this drama was legally settled last year, but it's only now reached its final conclusion. So overlooked by many people, the return to service of the A350-900 registered as Alpha 7 Alpha Lima Foxtrot saw the final grounded A350 fly passengers once again, and that's been inactive for approximately 2.5 years now. So the aircraft was one of several dozen that were grounded by the Qatari Civil Aviation Authority during the worst parts of this drama between the two parties and the safety concerns that were surrounding it. So according to planespotters.net, the aircraft was marked as stored from June 2021 to December 2023. And coming out of storage, the aircraft was flown to Shannon in Ireland on December 22nd, 2023. And there went for paint rework. I think a lot of the aircraft that had been grounded because of the paint issues went there before coming back to service. So it departed Shannon at 18:41 on February 7th after about 6 weeks in the paint shop, and then it arrived in Doha at around 4 a.m. the next day, but it only seemed to have a 90-minute test flight on February 15th before it returned to service finally on February 16th, flying QR1190 to Jeddah. But, you know, just in case you haven't been following, what was all of this drama about in the first place? Well, in November 2020, so over 3 years ago now, a Qatar Airways A350, another one, was sent to Shannon in Ireland for a paint issue, or not issue, but this aircraft, Alpha 7 Alpha Lima Lima, was due to receive a special World Cup livery, which already makes it feel like ages ago because the World Cup was ages ago. But, you know, when its existing paint scheme was removed, the aircraft was then ferried to Airbus's Toulouse home with reports of cracks. Airbus described these as irregularities on the surface coating and said the issue is superficial cosmetic and only visible when the top coat of paint is stripped. But Qatar Airways soon started noticing issues with its other aircraft, and a rift formed between it and the European plane maker. Instead of being quickly resolved, both sides stood their ground, and the rift eventually continued to grow wider. So things finally reached a head in December 2021, so almost a year into this drama, when Qatar Airways revealed that it would be taking Airbus to the High Court in London, seeking over $600 million in damages. Now, things were finally settled out on February 1st last year when the two parties revealed that they'd reached a settlement agreement. Unsurprisingly, the exact terms of the agreement remain under wraps today, and I don't expect that they'll ever be publicly released. But, fun fact, we did a poll on some of our Qatar Airways stories throughout the drama, asking which side of the drama people were on. 62% of the almost 4,000 people that responded to this poll said that they were on the side of Airbus. But there's one thing that I'm really interested to see what happens, and that's to the Airbus's, the airline's Airbus A380s. And, you know, that shouldn't come as a surprise with me. But Akbar Al-Baker always complained about having to bring the type back due to the capacity constraints from the A350 groundings. And, you know, always said as soon as the A350s are back, the A380s are out. But with the new leadership at Qatar Airways, I wonder if perhaps they might have received another stay of retirement. But as we love to say on this podcast, we'll have to wait and see.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to see them all back. But sorry for you, Tom, that it might mean the end of the A380 at Qatar. I guess they probably won't be going on for a second life. That's a sad thing as well.
I guess when one door opens, another one closes, if you want to look over to global.
Well, doors have been opening all over the place for Boeing. Some not so wanted as others. But I wanted to just reflect on a conversation I listened into with Boeing's chief financial Financial Officer Brian West just before I went on leave. Sorry, I haven't been here for a little bit, guys. So within Boeing facilities, teams of engineers are labouring away, not working on building new aircraft, though, but instead fixing issues with already built inventory. Boeing executives have begun referring to these activities with a common phrase, the shadow factory. Sounds very spooky and mysterious, but it's not. It's really just a project team. And they exist for both the 787 and the 737 lines. And these engineers are focused on fixing the faults that have been found in finished aircraft. We know all about these. Over the last couple of years, they've included shimming issues, fuselage problems, improperly drilled holes, missing bolts, and all sorts of other things. While the 737 MAX line will probably be some time before all the reworks are completed, there is now apparently a light at the end of the tunnel for the Dreamliner. So Brian West said the company is getting close to a stage where it will be able to close its 787 shadow factory, repointing that labour into new production, which of course will be to the benefit of the company. He was speaking at Cowen's Aerospace and Defence Conference earlier this month, and the quote I have from him is, "We had at the end of last year 50 airplanes that required rework, and those 50 airplanes we expect to move through the rework this year, and that gives us the ability to shut down that shadow factory." I'm sorry, I'm tripping over my words today. Not every one of those 50 aircraft will fly away by the end of the year, but the important point is that the rework will be complete. That lets us shut down the shadow factory and move the labour from reworking airplanes into working on new production. More engineers working on production is a good thing, particularly seeing as Boeing is on a bit of a countdown to get its production issues sorted. But something I found really interesting was actually having to spend time reworking aircraft that should be leaving the factory for customers. Obviously, is bad to Boeing's bottom line. But did you know those aircraft actually spend longer in the shadow factory than they do on the main production line? That was something that it's crazy, isn't it? It's insane to think of. You finish an airplane, then send it somewhere else to fix all the things you did wrong. So Dave Calhoun spoke about this. That's Boeing's CEO on the fourth quarter earnings call. And he said, "In our shadow factories, we put more hours into those airplanes than we do to produce it in the first place. That's a metric I know everybody can understand." Brian West supported that when I listened to him last week, saying, "The way we think about it is that the amount of hours it takes in the shadow factory is pretty much the same, if not a little bit more than the production line. That just demonstrates the opportunity that sits there. We can liquidate the inventory, shut down the shadow factories, and then be able to take that highly experienced labour and point it towards new production." But can they? Because the issue at the moment is that the FAA is not allowing any production increase until it is satisfied that quality is under control. The company's currently about 3 or 4 weeks into a 6-week audit, and the outcome of that will determine how the rest of the year shapes up for Boeing. They want to increase production, they want to increase output, but I don't know if they're going to be allowed to. Closing the shadow factories, however, surely that's the end of the process, not the beginning. I heard someone else describe it as a bit like the tail wagging the dog. Do you know what I mean? So Boeing needs to overhaul its quality control production processes first, which would then allow it to close the rework departments. And having executives waxing lyrical about closing the facilities before the root cause of the problem is solved seems a bit premature. So as I mentioned earlier, Boeing is on a bit of a clock for implementing its improvements. There was an all-day safety discussion at the FAA headquarters yesterday, as we're recording today on Wednesday.
Thursday.
Is it Thursday today already?
Yes.
My goodness. Well, 2 days ago then, an FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker told Boeing officials that it must develop a comprehensive action plan to address its systemic quality control issues. He said Boeing must commit to real and profound improvements. Making foundational change will require a sustained effort from Boeing leadership, and we are going to hold them accountable every step of the way with mutually understood milestones and expectations. And this was the crux, because Administrator Whitaker told Boeing he needs the company to provide the FAA with a comprehensive action plan within 90 days. The plan must include the steps Boeing will take to mature its safety management systems, which it committed to in 2019. It also needs to integrate its SMS program with a quality management system that will ensure that the same level of oversight is applied to the company's suppliers as well as its in-house activities. And it will generally create a measurable shift in manufacturing quality control. He added that Boeing must take a fresh look at every aspect of their quality control process and ensure that safety is the company's guiding principle. Calhoun responded to that in a statement saying that the leadership team was totally committed to addressing FAA concerns and developing the plan. He said, "We have a clear picture of what needs to be done. Boeing will develop the comprehensive action plan with measurable criteria that demonstrates the profound change that Administrator Whitaker and the FAA demand." However, there might not be an end to this issue yet, because Bloomberg reported yesterday that the Justice Department is back in the field and it's scrutinising the Alaska Airlines MAX 9 blowout to determine if that falls under the 2021 deferred prosecution agreement relating to the two fatal 737 MAX 8 crashes, which you remember was in 2018 and 2019. If the prosecutors determine the MAX 9 blowout is in breach of that agreement, Boeing could face criminal liability. So, not out of the woods yet. I guess the tree line is emerging with this comprehensive action plan being produced, but then they need to put it in place. Then they need to close their shadow factories. Then they need to get back to building damn good airplanes, which is what they should have been doing all along.
Yeah, I mean, I would still fly on a Boeing aircraft happily. I feel like the ones that are flying, I'm confident in the checks that they've all had, but you know, I do get the impression that Airbus is kind of having it served easy on a platter right now.
A little bit. I'll come back to that in my next segment as well.
Oh.
But I will hand back to you to talk
spoilers
about loyalty.
Yeah, well, I don't really have a good segue again. So I next up wanted to cover something we don't cover too often on this podcast, and that is the world of frequent flyer schemes. And this week, I specifically wanted to dial in on Air France and KLM's Flying Blue scheme. So Flying Blue is launching a status match offer for travellers based in the UK. And the paid partnership is with Loyalty Status Co. And this allows customers with existing loyalty status at 13 airlines to transfer to the equivalent tier in the Flying Blue program for a year. So I think I've actually seen, I think Royal Air Maroc and even the duty-free people at Heathrow did a similar thing with the same company. But specifically, this Flying Blue offer is targeted at customers in the UK, and the benefits of the higher status that you could earn include as accelerated earn rates, priority check-in and boarding, free seat selection options, and access to SkyTeam lounges for Gold and Platinum members. And passengers can sign up on the offer page using their Flying Blue account number, but they must pay an application and processing fee depending on the level of status they're applying for. So this, in my opinion, makes this really a status match that you would only take if it's worth it for you having, like you're seriously going to use it, rather than a status match that you might just get to use it once or twice a year. So the rates are as follows. If you want the silver status, that's €79 or equivalent $86. Gold is €199, $216. And platinum is a whopping €399 or $434, $33. So applicants will be informed within 3 business days if the status match has been approved. And once approved, the new status will be updated within the Flying Blue scheme within 5 business days. And then upon approval, it will last 12 months, so a whole year. But after that, passengers must requalify based on the standard requirements to retain the higher status in subsequent years. So who is this for, really? Well, it's not for members of SkyTeam Alliance airline programs, because those generally already have reciprocal benefits across member airlines. So it's primarily targeted at frequent flyers of different or non-alliance airlines who can perhaps be persuaded to fly with particularly Air France, KLM, instead of British Airways or Lufthansa, perhaps. So for Oneworld Alliance people, the program matches British Airways Executive Club Bronze members to Flying Club Silver. American Advantage members can be matched from Gold status and above. Qatar Airways Privilege Club also uses Avios. That makes the list. Iberia's Plus program, Malaysia Airlines Enrich, and Royal Air Maroc, who also have a separate status match within the company, as I mentioned. So Star Alliance members also have well representation on the list of airlines. Air Canada's Aeroplan, Lufthansa's Miles & More, SAS Scandinavian Airlines Eurobonus, TAP Air Portugal Miles & Go, Turkish Airlines Miles & Smiles, and United Airlines Mileage Plus programs are all on the list. Interestingly, there's also two frequent flyer programs from non-Alliance airlines, and they are, unsurprisingly, I think, Aer Lingus, Air Club, considering British Airways and Iberia and Qatar are already in there. But also Emirates Skywards can transfer their status. So personally, I find it interesting how the different tiers of status correspond to which tiers you're eligible for, because I looked at the list and, you know, I've always seen Lufthansa Senator and SAS Gold as kind of equal levels. But, you know, Lufthansa Senator will get you up to platinum, as will Lufthansa Honorary Circle, whereas SAS Gold will only get you up to Flying Blue Gold. So, you know, I'm not going to go through the full list of each status level here because that would take probably a whole podcast. But, you know, you can find that on simpleflying.com. And I think personally, I'd rather save the money to take more Lufthansa flights. But what about you, Joe?
I would, yes, probably. I don't think I'd want to buy points at any point in my life. I think it's like the reverse of what you should be doing. You should be flying more and earning more that way. Although I do know how Virgin Atlantic credit card that I use for everything, and my points balance is slowly trickling up. Soon it will be enough for an upper class upgrade, hopefully.
I mean, for me, you know, a lot of the flying that I do, there's no big SkyTeam hub in Frankfurt. So if I wanted to fly anywhere with SkyTeam, I'd have to usually go through Paris with Air France or Amsterdam with KLM. So to me, it doesn't make sense. You know, if it was free, I would do it for the benefits, obviously. Or even if it was €99 flat for the whole status match. But I think, you know, going above that, it's difficult to really justify.
Definitely. Well, I don't really have a good segue either, because we're going from talking about loyalty to talking about cargo aircraft. So if anybody wants to write in with a good segue for those two topics, I'd be delighted to hear it.
Answers on a postcard.
Definitely. Simple flying keyring for the best answer. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Boeing 767F, because this is one of the aircraft that has really stood the test of time. It's one of the most popular cargo aircraft in the world. One of the longest serving cargo aircraft in the world, and it's still being built. While Boeing kind of stopped building the 767 passenger aircraft a long time ago, the 767F still has active orders. Well, not for much longer is the crux of this, because the FAA is going to be adopting its previously proposed fuel efficiency rules for certain jet aircraft, and it applies to jet aircraft with a maximum takeoff weight of more than 5,700 kilos. This will, and could probably will spell the end of the production for the 767 freighter. The FAA's final rule on this was published mid-February, and it's going to come into effect on April the 16th. So it follows a notice of proposed rulemaking, which was published in mid-2022. It was interesting looking back at that, actually, because there were some 62 comments, a lot of them from very well-known parties, which included Airbus, Boeing, ATR, Embraer, Gulfstream, General Electric, as well as a bunch of airlines as well. And all of this relates to very stringent standards known as the Clean Air Act, which were adopted in 2017 by the International Civil Aviation Organization, or ICAO. This agreement sees all 193 ICAO member states pledging their support towards a sustainable future for aviation. As a result, the Environmental Protection Agency published its final rule to amend domestic aircraft greenhouse gas emissions standards in January 2021, and the FAA followed suit in accordance with the Clean Air Act in 2022. So when these standards come into effect, the 767 freighter cannot meet the emission standards. That's the bottom line. And under the new rules, Boeing will need to stop producing the 767F by the 1st of January 2028. That sounds like years away, but in terms of aircraft production, it's not that long. The FAA did note that it had received comments from Boeing, along with FedEx, GE and the Cargo Airline Association, who all expressed that there would continue to be demand for the 767 beyond the 1st of January 2028. They admitted it would be low, but for some missions, the 767 is simply the best cargo aircraft available in Boeing's wheelhouse. The only cargo airlines that currently have the 767 on order are UPS and FedEx. The latest order and delivery data from Boeing says that there's 21 and 16 for each of those airlines respectively. And at last year's Paris Air Show, Boeing Commercial Airplanes CEO Stan Deal did note that they could look at an exemption for the 767F from these new rules. Of course, it's not up to Boeing whether or not such an exemption will be granted. And given the current push on environmental considerations, it wouldn't be a good optic to be giving Boeing kind of get out clauses. And I would definitely kind of project that the 767F will have to stop being produced by 2028. It does have, Boeing rather, does still have the 777X freighter waiting in the wings, waiting to be certified, coming soon, maybe. But not all cargo operators will be in need of such a large aircraft. You know, the 747-8 isn't being produced anymore, and they haven't really got anything else. You know, the 777 freighters, some of them have got long lives ahead of them. But as far as brand new aircraft goes, there's really nothing else. Boeing was working on a new mid-size freighter. There was something that was kind of based on the 767 of a similar size, but it was going to be a clean sheet aircraft. At the same time, in kind of a competition, as Boeing likes to do with its product development teams, there was another team working on a derivative of the 787 Dreamliner as a freighter. Neither of those things have been formally announced yet. And Boeing said quite clearly after the MAX debacle that no new airplanes would be developed until everything was resolved in terms of production quality, as we were speaking about earlier. If I had to put my money on it, I would say the 787 Dreamliner could be a great freighter aircraft. It's very efficient. You know, it requires minor modifications to enable it to carry cargo. And it's not a brand new clean sheet aircraft. So it still ticks Boeing's boxes for we're not making any new planes until we've fixed all our issues. But, you know, if it doesn't get a move on, it's kind of being left in the lurch. And Airbus is coming up fast on the outside because they've got their lovely A350F getting orders left, right and centre. They've got various passenger to freighter aircraft that are proving to be really popular with the very efficient A321, etc. So, you know, while the 777-8F looks great, I think Boeing needs to think fairly seriously about a smaller cargo option for a new build aircraft. Otherwise, there's going to be nothing to meet the demand come 2028 and beyond.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it does really seem like everyone's just kind of a bit laid back with aircraft development at the moment. You know, the 350 is done. All of the Neos are done. I mean, there's the 777F is not really being developed anymore. It's just being tested. There was actually, this is my nice segue though. Somebody I think at the conference I was at this week was suggesting that the 777F has done more test flying hours than I think any other Boeing aircraft has, but none of those hours have gone to certification yet. And, you know, I haven't fact checked this or backed it up, so take that with a pinch of salt. But, you know, nice little segue. So I wanted to talk about this week's travel, and I've been at the Arab Aviation Summit, and, you know, I'm planning to talk about the conference much more next week on the podcast once I've had time to sort of digest it a bit more. And whatnot. But in the meantime, you know, I thought it was time for
Tom's A380 podcast.
So I was incredibly fortunate enough to travel in business class on the Emirates Airbus A380 earlier this week. Now, full disclosure, this was an upgrade that was granted by Emirates for the purpose of a flight review, but I've tried to be balanced, and, you know, there's good and bad in this. So the great experience already started at the airport, and I was expecting a chaotic queue at check-in given, you know, Airbus A380 flight. I think I had sequence number 477 or something. So that's a lot of passengers to process. And I was told that this was it's a boarding pass at the airport only type job. But, you know, there was a dedicated queue for business class that I used, even though all of the queues were empty. And after zipping through immigration, I then got to go to the Emirates Emirates Lounge at Frankfurt Airport for the first time. Now, I was incredibly surprised at how similar it is in look and feel to the Emirates Lounges in Dubai. You know, if you'd just been blindfolded and taken it off in this lounge, you would have been able to say this is an Emirates Lounge. But, you know, then it came time for boarding. It said boarding was going to be from 8:20 until 8:50. So I think I left the lounge about 8:30. And bear in mind, at Frankfurt Terminal 2, you still then have to do security because security is at the gate. But still, you know, I got there before boarding started, so I was still one of the first on. They had a sort of separate queuing area for business, first class and premium passengers, status passengers, but it didn't seem particularly well managed. There was no one sort of checking who was where and whatnot. But boarding was done via free jet bridges, so two for economy on the lower deck and one for first and business on the upper deck. And I must say it was a strange but pleasant experience to be walking uphill to get onto an aircraft. So I was in 23A, which sounds like not very far back, but that was pretty much the back of the upper cabin. And it was like in a smaller mini cabin. So this was actually a bulkhead window seat. And because it's like half throne style seating, it felt very cozy, which I was very appreciative of. We're greeted with pre-departure drinks, an amenity kit, and a small kit with slippers and an eye mask. Now, after takeoff, the crew came around with our meal orders, to take them even, and I asked for the cauliflower soup, the beef, and a fruit plate for dessert. And, you know, I was told the cauliflower soup was already all accounted for, so I was like, that's fine, no worries, I'll just skip the starter in that case. And the guy was like, are you sure? Is there nothing else I can get you? And, you know, I was just like, it's not that big a deal, I just won't have the soup. But then, when my tray was brought to me, it had a cauliflower soup on it, and the guy mentioned that he'd gone out of the way to track down an extra cauliflower soup for me without me asking or making any fuss. So that was a big pleasant surprise, and that was like one of these sort of little touch points that I think, you know, really changes the experience. You know, the food was all pretty good and tasty. I would say the big downside in my eyes was how long it took to serve such a big cabin. There was a lot of people doing the service, but it also a lot of meals to cook. And I think by the time, you know, it was all done and the lights were dimming down, there was only about 3 hours left to sleep on the night flight. And I think I went to the bar just for 30 minutes or so because, you know, I needed to sleep, but how often do you get to go to the bar on an A380 if you typically fly economy? So then I finally managed to get to sleep. I had about an hour of sleep on this night flight. There was a mattress topper, duvet-type blanket, pillow, and an eye mask, but that hour of sleep was a really good hour of sleep. I just wish I could have got more. It's not really a great 6 hours leaving at 9 p.m. is not really a great night flight, I think, unless you just go straight to sleep, which, you know, I would have loved to do. But then you can't really flight review if you just go straight to sleep the whole time.
Yep.
I think the other unfortunate thing for me was that this A380 was one of Emirates' older ones. And you could see this in the cabin, you know. It had older plugs, so you couldn't use a British plug in there. Thankfully, I had adapters. And it was all of these things. You know, I don't think it had the full ice offering because I looked through the ice offering before departure and I was like, oh, I want to watch The Hobbit. And it's said on the ICE website it's available, and then I went and couldn't find it anywhere on the aircraft itself. And also, you know, it was an aircraft with Wi-Fi, but I managed to send a few text-based messages, but other than that, you know, it really didn't seem to work particularly well for me. But, you know, the surprises continued after landing. There was a separate queue at immigration for business and first-class passengers. I barely had to wait at all, even though the general lines weren't bad either. And then after that, it was straight out of the airport, as I only had hand luggage, and into the waiting airport transfer. So, you know, I could have probably spent 15-20 minutes talking about that, but that's a very condensed version, and full flight review coming to Simple Flying near you soon.
Sounds great. I think that is always the thing, isn't it? When you're flight reviewing, you know you've got to stay awake and you've got to have the food and you've got to take photos of it. But I love it. I love the opportunity to fly business. It was very kind of Emirates to pop you up there. I've never done it on an Emirates aircraft, so
it is really appreciated. So if anyone at Emirates is listening, thank you for that, and you know, look forward to the flight review.
Definitely. Well, that was great. Thanks, Tom. But I think that's all we've got time for today on the podcast. We do hope you enjoyed it, and as usual, we welcome your feedback to editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please do leave us a rating on your favorite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.